This is a Jerry Pippin Show current event special.
The Desolation Row.
Desolation Row. Who would have ever thought that Bob Dylan would be singing about Wall Street and the banking business? Famed financier Warren Buffett of Berkshire Hathaway Investments sent out a letter over the weekend that rocked the financial markets. Buffett did not have a very good record last quarter. And in this letter, he said the future of the U.S. economy will be in shambles for a long time. Nothing very encouraging. As we do this program, stock markets around the world are plummeting due to Buffett's remarks. In fact, in the letter, he said he had never seen a drop in value like he's seen in the past year. In this program, we intend to examine the banking business and how it got to where it is today, a mess. And where is it going? Is there an end? Is there a way out? Our guest is Ellen Hodgkins Brown. She's on the line from Southern California. She has a Juris Doctorate degree, but basically has not been practicing law, but studying economics and financial history for years. She has been examining the world's business activities, and especially banking. She has a new book out called Web of Debt. It's a fast read and actually reads like a fiction bestseller, full of intrigue. But unfortunately, it's not fiction. It's true. What she lays out in this book is the fact that the banking system, not only here in the U.S., but around the world, is a giant Ponzi scheme. Ellen, welcome to the show. And as I opened up the top of the show, I mentioned Warren Buffett. Earlier today, he said something like, we're on the financial cliff, getting ready for a big fall. Is another Great Depression out there? Is that what's going to happen? Or can you see something more positive?
I actually find it rather positive. I wrote it because I was just blown away when I discovered myself that banks create all of our money. They create it as debt, except for coins. Coins are the only money created by the government. I mean, normally you think the government creates the money, you blame the government for things that go wrong, but it's not actually the government at all. We're all in the pocket of the bankers. The problem is they create the principal, but they don't create the interest to pay back their loans. So there's never enough money in the system to pay the whole thing off. It's a Ponzi scheme. So there's always more money owed than there is.
So in reality, we're really a credit society, not a cash society. I mean, this is not really new, though, Ellen. Anybody that studied elementary banking understands at least that part of it, I think. This has been going on for some time.
This has gone on for 300 years.
And I know, and it's a mess now after 300 years of tinkering, I guess. But you sound optimistic.
The old thing has to collapse before you can put in something new, and we're at that point. So it's actually an exciting time. If we can, there are two possibilities, you know, either we'll fall into a totalitarian civil unrest, police state sort of situation, or we'll snatch it from the fire and turn it into something wonderful and glorious, what we had in the 18th century, which was government-issued money, which worked really well. We lost it. According to Benjamin Franklin, we fought the American Revolution to preserve our own money system, and we lost it after the revolution. We've always known there was some problem. I mean, there are obvious inequities in our system, but as Milton Friedman said, I think in the 70s, he agreed that it would be better if he thought a 100% reserve solution would be good, where you would require the banks to lend only the money they had. But he said you would never be able to change the system as long as things are going well. You have to wait till it all collapses. Well, that's the point we're at. There's a quadrillion-dollar derivative scheme out there. We can't possibly save those banks. There's $165 trillion worth of derivatives right now on the books of U.S. banks, and we're just trying to bail them out by dribs and drabs.
Ellen, before we go any further, you just mentioned derivatives. And Warren Buffett, in his statement today, alluded to the fact that that was one of the reasons he had lost 96%. Well, let me rephrase that. His earnings were down 96% last quarter because of derivatives and investments in blue-chip stocks. I mean, what are derivatives?
Derivatives are basically just bets. They were devised as a way to supposedly... Well, the big one that's getting the banks in trouble right now are the credit default swaps. That's $62 trillion on the books of U.S. banks. That's what's cluttering up their books. Credit default swaps are basically bets that are sold as a form of insurance. So when the banks sold all this dodgy subprime loans that we've all heard about, they sold them off to investors, and in order to get the investors to buy them, they supposedly protected them with these credit default swaps, which meant that they sold off the risk of default. So they could say to the securities holders, don't worry, if these mortgages default, somebody else has agreed to bear the risk and to pay you the difference. Well, the problem with the scheme was that these were all private bets. It wasn't like a real insurance company that has to be checked by the government and so forth, the insurance commissioner, to make sure they actually have the assets to pay up. So that's the problem.
In other words, these derivatives are nothing but pieces of paper. Didn't the former Secretary Paulson, Secretary of the Treasury Paulson, wasn't that his didn't he contribute to derivatives? I mean, he was really pushing them, I think, before he went into government.
Yeah, at AIG, that's what got them in trouble. In the late 90s, they got into selling derivatives. They were just an ordinary insurance company before that, the world's largest, and they got into selling, supposedly guaranteeing against default for all sorts of loans. And at the time, they thought they were just getting free money. They were just selling off these premiums that people would buy, but it would never happen because everybody thought that housing never goes down, which is obviously, I mean, it's unbelievable that that's what they thought. But I read that was how they sold this whole plan. And, of course, it was true for a number of years. They were getting free money. So they collected all these premiums. And that's the reason it's such a difficult thing to unwind. The reason Ben Bernanke won't let I heard him say he was as mad as he had ever been about this AIG thing. He was mad like everybody else, but that we couldn't let it go down because he wasn't saving AIG. He was saving the counterparty. Those are all the people that bought all this credit default swap insurance. But who are they? They're banks, and I mean, we're still just saving the banking system. So my argument is we don't need that banking system. We can set up a public banking system that would work much better.
Seems to me you may be hinting about some sort of nationalization or something, and we'll get into that in a moment. But this bailout problem, to me, it just seems like we're giving the money to the wrong people. Why don't we give it to the end user, the people who lost the money, the public that invested? What do you think about all this, Ellen?
Well, certainly the ones that go bankrupt, rather than bailing them out, I mean, we've never bailed anything else out. What we do, you just let them go through bankruptcy in the ordinary way. You put in an FDIC receiver. I mean, every bankruptcy of a bank winds up either as a nationalization or they sell off the assets and get rid of the bank. But if they keep the bank as a bank, it's always a nationalization. I mean, they're using that word as if that's a bad word, but that's, in other words, the government always steps in when you have a bankrupt bank, sorts out the assets, pays off the creditors, not with taxpayer money. They just pay off the creditors according to what they've got. They all stand in line and they all take a haircut. That's an ordinary bankruptcy, and that's what they should do. Then, when they have the books cleared, then they take it over as a viable entity, but it is the government that runs it, at least for a while, till they get it going. But I think it's only going to work if we retain it as a government asset, because credit is a public asset. It should be. We don't want private banks creating our money. That's what they're doing right now. Money should be created by the people themselves. Credit is only your monetization of your own future promise to repay. It sounds very complicated, but of course I've set it all out with more clarity in my book.
Well, I think you're doing a pretty good job explaining it all. Privatization of banks, yeah, that's a worldwide phenomenon now, right? I mean, I don't know of any countries that, I guess there are some that operate their own banks, but that's what you're suggesting the U.S. should do, right?
Well, the private banking system is pretty well taken over, the private central banking system. It started with the Bank of England in 1694 and spread around the world. Of course, the Rothschilds were the famous banking family that in the 18th century that got control. Amschel Rothschild was the patriarch of the Rothschilds, and he famously said, "Allow me to issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who creates its laws." So that was their whole point, was to issue money privately and lend it to the government and make it look like the government was in charge, when really it was this private banking club that was controlling things. So right now there's the Bank for International Settlements is the private head of the private central banking international group. And it's in Basel, Switzerland. There are 55 members of the BIS, 55 countries that belong to it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are most of the major countries. But there are countries that own their own central bank, like China does for one, and Malaysia does for one. And you know, they're discreet about it, because
I think China's pretty upset with it. I think they feel they've been had. In fact, we probably did more damage to China by selling them our debt, than we could have ever done with a war. Maybe the reason that's why China has been harassing our Navy ships, I don't know. But if we take over the banking system, the people that have the banking system, they're not going to give it up easily, are they?
They don't have much choice.
You think is that bad, huh?
They're actually in serious straits. I mean, they have come to the end of the line, and they could... Technically, there are a number of people who could go to jail. I think if we graciously said, "Don't worry, we're not sending you to jail, just give us back the keys to our own money system," they might breathe a sigh of relief. You know that what a bank really does, it's merely just a guarantor. It does not issue its own money. It does not issue its customer or its depositors' money. What it lends is new money on its books. It's the credit of the person himself. So we'll look at Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life. The system just doesn't work. They have lent more money than they have, and they've been caught at it. It's a Ponzi scheme, just like the Bernie Madoff scheme, where when everybody comes for their money at once, there's not enough money. And so that's where they are now. So what do they do about it? If we stepped in and said, "Okay, we're going to fix this system. We're just going to take you over and do it the way it should have been done in the first place," I think they would be relieved to only have to do their job as bankers instead of being on the line for far more money than they actually have.
You know, I've often thought, Ellen, that somebody super rich like Bill Gates, if he went to the bank and said, "I want my money in cash," probably all the banks in the United States, maybe not even in the world, could come up with enough cash for him. So how do we do this? How do we straighten up the banking system and take our money back?
It would have to be gradual. Here's what I would recommend. There are four different ways I can think of to go about it. The first thing that I think, the easiest thing that might be done, and there are actually people talking about this now, would be for a state to start its own bank. So a state could do exactly what any bank does. There's one bank in the nation that does this, or one state. There are 46 of 50 states are technically insolvent right now.
I think in your book you mentioned the state. It was North Dakota, I think.
Oh, yeah. And they are one of the four solvent states. It's North Dakota. It's up there in it's farmland up in a cold area. I mean, why are they doing so well when everybody else is going under? It's because ever since 1919, by law, they have put all their state's revenues in their own bank, the Bank of North Dakota. They own it. Then they can lend. They did it specifically because Wall Street was getting all their money. It was flowing out of the state to pay these Wall Street creditors. So they set up their own credit system using their revenues as the reserves for their own bank. And then they could fan those reserves, just as any bank does, into 10 times that sum in loans. So then they could lend to themselves at very low interest or lend to their the farmers. They made like 1% loans to farmers. So they got everything going again in their states, and they've kept it going. So I think we should follow that model. Michigan, but I know there are people talking about it now in Michigan. Michigan's probably the most desperate of the states because they have the, well, if GM goes under, and they'll have the highest unemployment in there. Yeah, so they're really desperate to find some solution, and they're exploring solutions, and that's one they're exploring. And California could do it. We could do it by initiative in California. You know, people can get together. And
well, you live in California. Maybe you should be helping with the initiative petition.
I'm working.
Well, really, what kind of reception are you getting?
A lot of people are interested. You know, it does ring a bell.
Well, I know the California economy, as far as the state is concerned, is really terrible. But I guess, really, a lot of that's due to the crisis of high mortgages, values,
yeah, and they almost had to pay their employees with IOUs.
I know. And it looks like, to me, the fix they settled on is temporary at best.
You could either nationalize the Federal Reserve, actually make it a government, make it federal, like everybody thinks it is, and then it lends them to the government. Well, it could just issue them as government money. I mean, we're creating money either way, but we wind up owing it back to a bank that we never, ever pay it back to. We just pay the interest.
For the life of me, I can't figure out why Congress did that anyway, turned it over to the Federal Reserve, to a central bank.
I don't think they knew what they were agreeing to. And in fact, the Federal Reserve now rebates the interest because when Wright Patman, who was head of the House Banking...
Wright Patman. That's a famous name out of the past.
Yeah, when he figured that out, he was shocked and appalled and tried to get the Federal Reserve actually turned into a federal agency. He didn't succeed, but he did succeed in getting them to agree to refund the interest because it obviously made no sense that we're paying interest to a bank that's creating money out of nothing. Why aren't we creating money ourselves, our own national currency? So that's a second thing. Without even nationalizing the Federal Reserve, you could just mandate it to create the money to fund, in other words, to lend money, which is just created on their books the way they always create money, just lend the money for Obama's stimulus package or for any government thing, so you know, any anything over the amount of taxes we have that we need to fund. And then they rebate the interest. They roll the loans over indefinitely, as they always do. The federal debt has not been paid off since 1838. And so it's the same thing as issuing your own money, but it's on the books. It's a loan. So that's one, two, three. Then the fourth possibility would be to, when banks go bankrupt, to nationalize them and keep them as public agencies. It's not unheard of. It's been... The Reconstruction Finance Corporation was set up in the 30s. It was a federal institution that was a funding institution. It used to be the post offices acted as banks. You could go in and get your postal money orders and stuff. They did banking functions. Many countries have public banking systems.
Really?
In Switzerland, you have a choice. You can go to a government-owned bank or a private bank. They both are operating. In India, they have government banks and private banks. And the government banks right now are the ones that are doing really well because they didn't get involved in this whole derivative scheme. They used to be criticized that they were too public-spirited, you know, and they weren't profit-oriented enough, and they weren't making any money, you know, they were just serving the people. Well, they served the people well because the other banks are now going under, the big private banks that have...
Helen, you know a lot about the banking business. What's your background?
I'm a lawyer, but I'm really a writer and a researcher.
Well, I knew you were a lawyer, but you like to write. So did I. I wanted to be a lawyer, but I worked my way through college doing broadcasting, and the radio bug bit me, and here I am 45 or 50 years later.
I wanted to be a writer before I went to law school, but I figured out that I couldn't support myself as writing as a young person. But anyway, yes, that was one of the subjects I explored, and then I practiced law as I did UCC law, you know, which is, I mean, basic contract law, so I know the basic principles. I always wanted to be a writer. I mean, what I liked about law was it was a lot of writing. I liked writing briefs.
You know, you bring up something in the book that I've talked about for a long time now, the Vegas School of Banking. It seems like you have better luck investing if you just went to Las Vegas and played the crap table. I mean, if you knew how to play the game, you know.
Right, because at least you know you're gambling. You know what you're walking into. That is the problem with the unwinding these derivatives, that people didn't realize the risk they were taking. I mean, if a big bank comes to you, I read this about a lot of local legislators or just people on the school board or whatever that are just trying to do good for the community, and these big Wall Street bankers come in and they say, oh, you're going to need some of these credit default swaps. This will protect you against, you know, default.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sell them to them. So if you try to unwind all that, who is at fault here? Who is at fault was the huckster who put together these financial products and said they worked.
And now they're saying we should bail out these guys, and we're doing it. I mean, even Paulson, I mean, he was guilty of doing all this. He did a lot of that before he went to the Secretary of Treasury job.
He was, yeah. That's another whole shocking. That the way our system works, that in order to save the banks, to make the banks viable entities, they've made one concession after another. It's always, Alan Greenspan in the 90s was, before that, derivatives were considered fraudulent or an illegal form of gambling, or there was some question whether they weren't an illegal form of gambling. And Alan Greenspan said, no, they were a great idea because they were going to be good for the banks. They were going to give the banks new business, something they could get into, and the banks, of course, were struggling after the savings and loans collapse of the 80s. So it was always to have the Federal Reserve operates, their purpose is, as the head of the private banking system, their purpose is to keep that private banking parasite going by whatever means. And so that's always been the slant. When you turn on CNBC, you know, it's always about keeping the banking system going. But to do that, they had to relax or get rid of one law after another that was supposed to be regulating them.
Well, I think a lot of the fault lies in the 90s with the Republican Congress, whose agenda every time they went to session was to relax these banking rules and let them sell insurance and securities, et cetera. The public should be outraged.
Well, the public, I don't think, has really a lot of say in much of anything. It all happens in Congress, right? But as I understand it, the reason they revoked Glass-Steagall, which was the Glass-Steagall Act was instituted in the 30s to separate ordinary bank, commercial banks from investment banks.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they were together, then the investment bankers would be trying to sell stuff to their own customers that weren't good for their own customers. They were acting against the best interests of their own customers. Because the depositors, of course, had the money, and then the investment wing was trying to talk them into these investments that weren't necessarily so good. So they separated those, and then in the 90s, the reason Clinton and Greenspan and so forth went along with this idea was that the banks were struggling. They couldn't seem to make any money. There were all these non-bank institutions that had gotten into the lending business, like GM, and the mortgage companies and so forth. They were lending, and they were getting their money from investors, selling the stuff off as securities, et cetera. So the whole system was getting out of the hands of the banking system, and so it was agreed that if they got rid of that old archaic rule, they could do a lot more business. So it was all about making money for the banks. As if that would be good for all of us to have a thriving banking system, but we've seen it's not.
Well, I know a lot of conservatives are upset with Obama's bailout plan, but at least it's going for something you can see, mostly. The $700 billion we spent last year under Bush, that was just money thrown away. I mean, for $700 billion, we could have started our own bank, I would think.
Exactly, and why are we putting our resources in? For instance, Citigroup, we've already paid enough to buy all the stock of Citigroup. We should own it. We, the people, should own it already. But, in fact, we only own 38% of it. And I heard them on CNBC. It was, you know, one of the business station, one of the people talking about it said, as if to say, don't worry, investors, it's all okay for Citigroup because the taxpayers are just going to have it long enough to take the hit on the cleaning up their books. And then when they get enough taxpayer money in there to clean things up, then they're going to give it back to the investors. So you'll be fine. Back to the, you know, the original. Well, so here we are socializing risk and privatizing the rewards. We should at least get the rewards if we're going to be bearing the risk. And actually, I said this last fall in an article that we could have taken the $700 billion of the bailout and leveraged it the way any bank does, and you would have $7 trillion. You would turn it into $7 trillion in loans. And that's what the Federal Reserve is doing right now. But they're making the loans to private entities, banks, credit card companies, corporations, et cetera. They could make those loans instead to the U.S. government. In other words, we could have taken our own $700 billion, leveraged it into $7 trillion the way banks do, and we would have enough money to cover Social Security and all those other things we think we don't have the money for. We've got it. Money is just credit. And we, the people, have the credit of the people, of the United States.
You know, I've often thought, Ellen, that somebody super rich like Bill Gates, if he went to the bank and said, I want my money in cash, probably all the banks in the United States, maybe not even in the world, could come up with enough cash for it. So how do we do this? How do we straighten up the banking system and take our money back?
I heard somebody on TV, it was a legislator, saying that the reason that they did that bailout, that $700 billion bailout, Henry Paulson, Lehman Brothers, you know, went bankrupt mm-hmm. on September 15th. And that day, in the space of 2 hours, we had the biggest bank run in history, although nobody really knew about it because it was an electronic.
Yeah, we have a column about that. Evidently, about $550 billion is taken out of the money markets in a little about 2 hours or so. In fact, they just shut everything down finally around 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Uh-huh. And money market funds were withdrawn suddenly.
Now we know why everybody looked so panicked that day. My question is, who got the money? Don't you have a bank trail when you start taking money out by direct deposit or whatever, how you do it on the Internet? I mean, somebody knows. Come on, tell us, guys. Who's got the money, honey?
Well, I actually was writing about that, so I'm trying to figure that out, too. But, you know, before that, there was all this rumor about that when a big derivative bank, if they didn't bail them all out, that if one went bankrupt, that would be the end of the system because you would have all these cross defaults of these derivatives going on. Everybody was hooked, all the big banks are hooked into derivatives both ways. They have, they've sold credit default swaps and they bought credit default swaps. So if they lose the bet that they, if they don't get the money, if Lehman Brothers was supposed to pay them and they don't get that money, then they can't pay on the one that they owe. And so the whole thing is just a domino thing that all collapses. So all the banks are hooked into that. All the big banks, the big Wall Street mm-hmm. derivatives banks are hooked into that. So they were all pulling their money out en masse because they were predicting that would happen. But it is strange that it happened in 2 hours. I mean, who even knew in that much space of time? Was it program trading where the computers just went off? Or
was it a bank heist, the biggest bank heist in history, done in cyberspace? Hey, don't smirk. A bite might have happened, Ellen.
I don't know, but it is. I've also read that they didn't have to let Lehman Brothers go bankrupt in that way. I mean, I don't think they should bail any of them out, but they could have saved the money market portion of it just the way they do with, well, for instance, when Andy Mack went bankrupt, it didn't hurt anything. The FDIC steps in, takes over, and rearranges things and gets things going again, sells off the parts that need to be sold.
Yeah, I think that Lehman Brothers, there was some personal politics between Paulson and maybe others in the administration and the people running Lehman Brothers. I think there was more going on than we know.
What it may have been was basically a gun to the head sort of thing, saying this is what will happen if you don't bail out our banks. You know, let anyone go bankrupt and that's what's going to happen. And then, because it certainly worked, after that, Congress has come through every single time to bail out these banks that everybody knows they're crooks and that they don't deserve to be bailed out. But like Ben Bernanke said, what can we do?
So basically what we can do, I guess, is rearrange the banking system. And you basically are saying, Ellen, that it's so screwed up, so messed up now, that they may agree to let us just take it back and do it right this time.
In the daylight, I'm very optimistic, and I think that, you know, we could pull it out of the fire. We need some sort of a movement. We need political clout we need a lobby that's as big as the banking lobby, which we could have. If you had all these homeowners who are facing foreclosure, there's this produce the note defense. They could all bring that. Like 90% of foreclosures don't have the proper paperwork to go through with a foreclosure if they knew about that. In other words, if we mobilized and organized, there are some serious defenses we could bring that would cripple the banking system as we know it. We wouldn't have to do it. We could just say, we know that this is the power we have, so here are our requests, and otherwise this is what we're going to do. I mean, there are ways that we could have financial clout as well. It doesn't do to take to the streets. Nobody pays any attention to that. What you have to do is go right into Congress with your lobby that has as much financial clout as their lobby does.
Ellen, we need a leader. Maybe you should be it.
No, all I can do is write and throw my ideas out there. I mean, I do try. I talk to anybody.
Well, somebody needs to take on the money to interest, for sure. I mean, this whole thing, you could see it coming. Yet everybody was acting like boom times would be here forever. Everything would go up. Speculating here, speculating there. In fact, that was how they made their money, speculation.
Nothing has gone wrong. I mean, we still have the factories, we still have the workers, we still have the resources. Why did everything suddenly fall apart? It's only our credit system. Well, so get rid of that credit system and get a new one. I mean, surely that can be fixed. It's only a mathematical problem, a problem of the medium of exchange. The things are there. We just got to get them exchanging again.
Ellen Ogden Brown, thanks very much for a great show and very revealing about our finances. Our financial house is a house of cards. Wow. This has been a Jerry Pippin special. Thanks, Ellen.
Okay, great talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.